79. Dungeon Master. Hollis stood behind him, trying to pretend she was watching someone play a game, something tedious and self-importantly arcane, on multiple screens. Something that didn't matter, was of no great importance, on which nothing depended. A game with undergraduate production values, no music, no sound effects. Gareth the Dungeon Master, defining the quests, setting tasks, issuing gold and sigils of invisibility. Better to look at it that way. But she couldn't make it stick. She leaned back, against aubergine-coated automotive steel, the coolness of it, and watched the video feed from Fiona's drone. Whatever Fiona was flying felt hummingbird swift, capable of brilliantly sudden pause and sustained hover, but also of elevator-like ascents and descents, all in pale green monochrome of night vision. Her cameras were better than Milgrim's, expensively optimised. Hollis, with no idea what it might look like, imagined it a huge dragonfly, its body the size of a baguette, the pulsing wings iridescent. It had hovered, watching four men emerge from a black sedan. A Mercedes hire car, Gareth had said, having somehow checked plate numbers. Two of the men were tall, broad-shouldered, and efficient-looking. Another, shorter, almost certainly Foley, limped. The fourth, whose posture she now recalled from Los Angeles and Vancouver, a perpetual petulant slump, was Bobby Chombo, Big N's pet mathematician. That same annoying haircut, half of his thin face lost behind an unwashed diagonal curtain. There he'd been, below Fiona's dragonfly, as if in a pale green steel engraving, wrapped in what looked like a robe or dressing gown. Neurasthenic, she remembered Inchmail delighting in calling him. He'd said that neurasthenia was coming back, and that Bobby was ahead of the curve, an early adapter. Gareth took it for granted that one of the taller men, the one in the dark raincoat, carrying a rectangular package, was Gracie. This based, Hollis gathered, on the others having some kind of archaic rocker hair, hair that reminded her of one of Jimmy's junkie friends, a drummer from Detroit. When the four of them, Foley seeming to be leading Chombo, had moved on, away from the car, Gareth had had Fiona dip down to read the car's plate number and peek through the window, in case they'd left someone to watch it, a complication that Hollis gathered would have required some other, and more unpleasant, skill on Pep's part. The car had been empty, and Fiona, aloft again, had found them easily, still moving. But the one Gareth thought was Gracie was gone, missing, and still was, his package with him. Fiona had been unable to look for him then, because Gareth had needed her back at the car, so that he could vet Pep's arrival and subsequent burglary, which had taken all of 46 seconds, passenger side door, complete with lock-up. Pep, following instructions, hadn't been wearing the messenger bag, and Hollis assumed he'd deposited the other party favour, whatever it might be, in the car, that being evidently the plan. And then he was gone, his dual-engined electric bicycle utterly silent, capable of an easy 60 miles per hour, never having intersected with the focal cones of any of the cameras showing on the screen of Gareth's laptop. Had it, Gareth said, the resulting image of a riderless bicycle might have negated the whole exercise. The camera map on Gareth's laptop was grayscale, the cones of camera vision red, each one fading to pink as it spread from its apex. Occasionally, one of them would move, as an actual given camera motored on its axis. She had no idea where this particular display was being dark-netted from, and she was glad that she didn't. The screen that offered Milgrim's video feed, she thought, seemed entirely out of step with the operation, and perhaps for that reason, she found herself going back to it, though it wasn't very interesting. With Gracie still unaccounted for, she felt Gareth's nerves. He could have used someone who knew what they were doing, she guessed, on another drone like Fiona's. Whatever Milgrim was flying, it seemed leisurely, almost comical, though capable of invigorating bursts of sustained forward motion. Having been instructed, via Fiona, to make a circuit of the area, looking for Gracie, he had, though Gareth had complained that he was too high. Now he was cruising, she saw, above vegetation scrubby enough to warrant the name, Gareth apparently having forgotten about him. But nothing had been expected of Milgrim and his drone, she knew. He'd been given the job to keep him out of Big N's hands. The sound of a very long zipper being stealthily undone. She glanced to the right and saw Heidi touch her upraised forefinger to her lips. "Hour two," Gareth said to the headset, "a starting for point now. Put it down about 20 meters west of point. We'll have to run with the batteries you have." That would be Fiona. As he spoke, Heidi slipped through the fly and slowly lowered the zipper, closing it behind her. Point, Hollis knew, would be the GPS coordinates that Gracie had specified as the site of the exchange. On Fiona's screen, the perspective suddenly dropped to knee height, then raced forward over darkly blurred grass, as if from the viewpoint of a hyperkinetic child. Milgrim, she saw, had reached the end of the scrub and was turning slowly around for more. "I hope she just had to pee," thought Hollis, glancing back at the long plastic zipper.